Go ahead and take your Bibles and turn to James chapter 3. James chapter 3. That's where we'll begin this morning. I believe it was Brother Bailey that got me lined up to be with this congregation. I really do wish it was under different circumstances, and I certainly am praying for the evangelist here and hoping that his treatments are successful, hoping that that surgery that was mentioned in the prayer will be successful. But nevertheless, I am thankful to be here and have the opportunity to present God's Word to you this morning. Brother Bailey mentioned that the first lesson is quite a bit shorter than the second usually, and I've been doing this for a couple years now, so finding a shorter lesson is not necessarily easy anymore. Typically, I'm a little bit long-winded, so just kind of bear with me this morning. We're going to look at James chapter 3 and verses 13 through 18. I really just want us to look at this text, kind of explain it verse by verse, and then take some application home from that. Some of you are note takers. I do not have PowerPoint with me this morning. And so if you are a note taker, you can simply title this section, "The Person That Seeks Wisdom From Above." The person that seeks wisdom from above. So that being said, let's go ahead and get into the text. James chapter 3. Let's look at verses 13 through 18. "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." This passage is probably familiar to us. We've probably looked at the book of James countless times, many of you. And so when we come to this section, we think that it's talking automatically about wisdom and exactly what godly wisdom looks like. And in turn, it really is, but I think it goes a little bit deeper than that. We have to consider the context first. So what is James talking about here? He's talking about teachers. He started in chapter 3 and verse 1. He said, "Let not many of you become teachers." Teachers are going to have a stricter judgment. And he goes on to talk about the tongue and all the things that the tongue can do to us, can do even for us, how powerful it is. So he goes to talk about taming the tongue, but now he's turning his attention rather from the tongue to the character of the teacher themselves. And so some people look at this and they say, well, this just applies to teachers and preachers. But in fact, this applies to all of us. Why? Because at some point throughout our lives, we are all supposed to be teachers. In some way, shape, form, or fashion, you are going to be teaching the gospel to somebody. Whether that be by your example that leads to a conversation, or whether you are a Bible class teacher, or you are getting up in the pulpit, this applies to each and every one of us. We should be teachers throughout our lives. So as we look at this passage, the first question I started to ask myself is, well, what is this wisdom that James is speaking of here? What does wisdom look like? What do we typically think of when we think of somebody that's wise? And that answer generally leads to somebody who maybe is older, somebody who has a lot of experience, maybe has worked a long time in a specific field, somebody who's had a lot of different life experiences. That's generally, we look at someone and we consider them wise if they've had those type of characteristics to go along with them. But is that necessarily true? As a general rule, it's not always the case. You can have someone who's much older and they still may not be wise. And you can have someone who's younger, but maybe they may have a lot of experiences and they've known how to apply the wisdom that has been given to them and they've learned a lot from their experiences. So age does not necessarily correlate directly to wisdom. But I told you we're going to take this verse by verse. We'll get to the application at the end, so just bear with me. So let's look at verse 13. We've read these passages, so now we can start looking at them. "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds and the gentleness of wisdom." So now he's turned his attention to the character of the teacher. And what James is doing here, this question, who among you is wise and understanding, it's a rhetorical question. James is really throwing out a sarcastic comment here. He's calling out those who are prideful. And he's going to test their claim of wisdom and understanding. There were teachers, clearly, that were going about claiming that they had wisdom, they had understanding, and James wants to put that to the test. And this is the best part, too, that James knows, clearly, that there are prideful teachers that exist among the brethren. He's writing just to brethren that are scattered abroad. He knows that prideful teachers exist. But does he call anybody out by name? I don't see anybody mentioned here. You know, Paul does that a couple times. He actually chooses to call out certain false teachers and brethren by name. James doesn't do that. Why doesn't James do that? Well, I think the answer is pretty simple. James doesn't call anybody out because somebody that's prideful is going to let you know that they're prideful. Do you usually have to ask somebody if they're struggling with pride? Do you usually have to ask that type of question? No, because they're going to tell you. They will reveal themselves to you. The term understanding that's mentioned here, who among you is wise and understanding, the term understanding here is not referring to the intellectual form of wisdom typically that we think of. It is referring to the moral form of wisdom. James places moral wisdom at a higher priority than intellectual wisdom. Why would James do that? Why is moral wisdom, when it comes to our everyday behavior, at a higher priority for James than intellectual wisdom? It's very simple. What good is intellectual wisdom without moral behavior? That's basically preaching what you don't practice. And does that do any good for anybody? Do we typically listen to preachers who will preach something that they don't themselves practice? No, that usually doesn't go very well. And those people don't have a lot of influence. So that's why James places this at a higher priority. And this ties back to James chapter 1. If you remember toward the end of James chapter 1, James talked about looking at Scripture and basically looking in a mirror. And he says, who looks in the mirror realizes, basically, that their hair's all messed up and then just walks away from it like nothing happened. That's sometimes what happens when we look at Scripture, we see what's wrong with our lives, and we don't change anything about it. So James is talking about this practical, moral form of wisdom. So James continues with this and says, if you think that you are wise, let him show it by his good behavior and the gentleness or meekness of wisdom. The point is that those who are truly wise can live up to this test. They can show their good behavior. But not only can they show their good behavior, they can do it with humility. There are some people we know who, they can show good behavior, but what's the problem? They can show good behavior, but they've got to tell everybody about it. You know those people? I think we do. And that's what James is talking about. You've got to have both. You can't just have good behavior, you've got to have humility too. The key to this is the word gentleness or meekness. You are required to show true wisdom with meekness. And we're going to see why in just a moment. As we look at verse 14, it mentions, if you have bitter jealousy or selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. The term jealousy that's mentioned here in the Greek actually has a greater reference to the heart of zealots, or that of zeal. That's really talking about zeal there more or less than just pure jealousy. And when it's talking about zeal and in really reference to zealots, what do we know about the zealots? Simon was considered a zealot. These are people who were extremist. They were willing to resort to bloodshed to accomplish their means. These are very extreme people that we're talking about here. And so James is pointing out that this jealousy was ready and willing to act. James describes this jealousy as bitter and tells us that some of these teachers, they were harsh, they were angry, they were aggressive, and some teachers were perhaps bordering on threats of violence in this day and age. Now here's the problem with that as we try to apply this to us. Because we do not experience such acts like this today, it's likely that because things seem peaceful, you might say, within the church, We fail to notice and condemn bitterness at times. Because it's maybe not as prominent, because maybe it's not as forthright, we fail to notice and condemn bitterness and strife. James speaks of selfish ambition here. And the selfish ambition that James is talking about carries the tone of rivalry or seeking followers. Have you ever known two preachers to be at each other's throat because of a rivalry? I've seen it. It's not very pretty either. But that existed then. It exists today, especially in Alabama. We've got a church on every block. And so if you think that rivalry doesn't exist in this state, it very much does. We need to wake up to that. Very much a temptation for us. But James's point is that there were some teachers that were teaching truly to save souls. And then there were some that were teaching to gain their own following. And this exists today. And so the point is that we have to be wise as students to know the difference. And usually the difference is quite obvious. Those who are seeking to save souls are going to be much like Paul. They will just rejoice at the fact that the gospel is preached. Verse 15, this wisdom that James has just talked about, in verse 14, that wisdom, that is not wisdom from above, but is earthly, natural, and demonic. So the wisdom in verse 14 is false wisdom. It comes from earthly, natural, and demonic means. People who act like that did not gain their wisdom from God. And James speaks plainly about this. I want to ask a question, and it's rhetorical. But I want you to consider it really and truly, and I hope that you'll think about this, because this happens. So if we know that there are people who, and teachers, I need to point that out. James is not talking about false teachers outside the church. He's talking about false teachers within inside the church. So if we know that false wisdom exists and some people are teaching out of the wrong motive, why do we listen to people with false wisdom and fall for it? Why do we listen to these people and fail to see it? I'd asked this question at a college Bible class, a few weeks ago, and the answers I got are probably going to be pretty similar to answers you would give. So I'll enlighten you on some of the things that college kids had to say. That may be worth your while, I don't know. But one of the things that we had kind of come up with is that relationships with people that we really trust, care about, maybe have known a long time, tend to allow us to maybe overlook things. People that we love and people that we care about, sometimes we don't tend to check them as well as maybe a stranger. And why is that? Well, because we don't think that anybody who loves us or cares about us would ever lie to us. So we don't tend to really look into their motives very much, and we kind of overlook maybe the things that they're talking about. And that's important to consider, because there are some preachers out there that are very smooth talkers, they're very easy to have a relationship with, and sometimes in that, they may be saying something that's completely false. But because of our relationship with them, we kind of fail to see what they're really teaching. K.A. Richardson had this to say about these verses. He said, "Actions reflect attitude. From effect, one can perceive cause." So what effects did false wisdom have? Well, I think we clearly see it, and we're going to see it in verse 16. "For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there's disorder in every evil thing." What effects did false wisdom have? It caused chaos. And every evil thing that we could possibly imagine existed from that. So if the wisdom that someone has is false wisdom, if it's not from above, then where else must it have come from? Well, it must have risen up from below. You're at the hand of God, or you're at the hand of Satan. And there really is not a middle ground here. It's important that we consider that. Verse 16, James tells us about the effects of these wisdom, about the effects of false wisdom leads to chaos. Does anybody just prefer chaos? I don't typically think that anybody does. I think we like order. I think we like being able to have a system. And what this false wisdom leads to is this chaos and disorder that we can't even begin to try to put back together. So we've talked a lot about this false wisdom that James mentions that exists. What about wisdom from above, though? That's what he begins talking about in verse 17. But the wisdom from above, so what is he talking about here now? It's important to realize about this passage that James is not actually talking about wisdom itself. Because even in these prior passages, he talks about where wisdom, I guess from below, will lead. But this wisdom from above that he mentions is not so much about wisdom, it's about the character of someone who wants to possess godly wisdom. The character of someone who does possess godly wisdom. That's what he's talking about. Not necessarily wisdom itself, but the character of the one who possesses it. Dan King Sr. had this to say: true wisdom, originally and essentially, was the knowledge of duties and dangers in this moral life, as revealed in the law of God, and as this study was directed to practical areas, not to theoretical ideas. And the point is that wisdom was first practical, not intellectual. And that's what we typically think of when we think of wisdom. What's the basic definition we give of wisdom? Applied knowledge. So we think it's something that's intellectual. And to a degree, it has to be. But for the most part, it's not. We've made it intellectual and not practical. And by doing that, we have taken what the meaning is, changed it, and therefore made it difficult to apply to our lives. And so James wants us to have a practical, acting wisdom here. And he tells us what this should look like. That's why he explains this in verse 17. He tells us exactly what this looks like. He said, it is first pure. Now, this purity that James is talking about is not a reference to sexual purity or even the absence of sin, as some think. But this is reference instead to the absence of a sinful attitude or motive. That's what James is talking about. This is why it says it is first pure. With a sinful attitude or motive, you can never accomplish the rest of the things that James mentions here about the person possessing true wisdom. And so this is, once again, not necessarily defining wisdom, but the person possessing it. Not only, though, is this person first pure, they are also peaceable. This is what the false teachers were not. Someone who is not wise likes to stir arguments, strife, and create division. That's what they like to do. They like to stir the pot and then step back and watch what happens. That's what people with false wisdom like to do. A wise person knows how to deal with sin, knows how to deal with people, and they know how to do it in a peaceable way. Now, does that mean that conflict never happens? Does that mean that tough conversations never happen? No, not at all. But I think we know the difference between a tough conversation and someone just merely stirring the pot. I think most of you have been around long enough to know the difference. But not only are these people peaceable, but they're gentle, they're kind. Aristotle described the Greek word that's mentioned here for gentle as justice and beyond justice. The man with this trait is the man who knows when it is actually wrong to apply the strictest letter of the law. And this is actually the trait that Jesus possessed and had on the woman that was caught in adultery in John chapter 8. You remember what happened there? Pharisees brought Jesus this woman. She'd been caught in adultery. And by the letter of the law in the Old Testament, they could have had her killed right there. Jesus was the one that was sinless. He was the one that they were looking to mess up, so they were going to let him cast that first stone. And Jesus is not going to do it here. Why not? Jesus had the right to. He had the right to apply the strictest letter of the law, but why didn't he do that? Well, because Jesus knew when it was actually time for compassion. Jesus knew the difference. This woman had clearly messed up. And Jesus has a characteristic that we do not. He knows how to see inside the hearts and minds of people. But he knew when it was time for compassion. He also knew when it was time to stand firm. Because in Matthew 23, you remember, he finally just gave the Pharisees exactly what they needed to hear. He knew when it was time for compassion. He knew when it was time to stand firm. That is something we struggle with. Oftentimes, we offer compassion when it's time to stand firm, and then we stand firm when it's really time for compassion. And we struggle to differentiate the two. We struggle to know the difference. Jesus knew the difference. And someone who is gentle and kind and well-meaning is, generally speaking, going to know the difference. But that takes a lot of discernment. It takes time, but it also takes study. And that's what James is talking about here. Not only are these people gentle and kind, but they're reasonable. They're full of mercy, full of good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. They live the life that they claim, and the life that they claim is the life they're going to preach. They're not going to claim to live one thing and then do something completely opposite. They're not going to preach one thing and do the complete opposite. They are not hypocritical people. And ultimately, you'll know they're not hypocritical people because they're full of good fruits. Their fruits speak for themselves. You don't have to question their character because you can see what they're putting out. Verse 18. I know we're running a little short on time. This verse shows where wisdom from above leads. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So this verse tells us where wisdom from above leads. Sown in peace by those who make peace. What does that mean? What is James saying? Sown in peace by those who make peace. What he means by that is this. Peace doesn't come about because time passes by. Many of you are much older than me. You've probably had relationships that have broken apart. And we've all probably heard the old adage, time heals all wounds. Is that true? Does time really heal all wounds? No, it doesn't. Not at all. So what does heal wounds? Actually striving to make peace. Sown in peace by those who make peace. Peace happens in a relationship because someone is intentionally striving to make that peace. People who strive for peace are rewarded with it. And wise people understand that they will sow the fruits of their labor. You cannot expect for time to just pass by and everything's going to be okay. That's why we have people who have been 30 years removed that would still be at each other's throats if they were in the same location. Because time doesn't heal all wounds. You know what does heal wounds? Actually striving to make peace. And that's what James is talking about here. So, quick application before we're done. I just want to give you one application from each verse. There's just a few verses here. One application from each verse and the lesson is yours. So from verse 13, we went through these passages now. From verse 13, behavior determines who is wise. And the attitude behind the behavior does likewise. Behavior determines who is wise, and the attitude behind the behavior does likewise. So not only does your behavior show that you're wise, but your attitude combined with it will show that it is true godly wisdom. Verse 14 tells us the definition of false wisdom. What it looks like, it's bitter, it's jealous, it's got selfish ambition, it's arrogant, and it lies against that which is true. Verse 15 tells us we're the origin of false wisdom. It is earthly, it's natural, it's demonic, it rises up from below. And we need to remember why we might fall for this false wisdom. Because of our relationships, because of people we've known and cared about and loved for so many years, oftentimes we can overlook maybe false things that they might be saying. We have to remember why we might fall for this sort of teaching. In verse 16, we see the result of false wisdom. Disorder in every evil thing. And the important reason I believe that James puts this in here is it takes our curiosity out of play. You know, as a kid, even so now, I'd still consider myself a kid to some degree. There are a lot of things that I'm like, I wonder what would happen if I did that. You know, as a kid, it's always, I wonder what happens if I touch the stove. And your parents tell you over and over, do not touch the stove. But it takes you touching the stove to figure that out. James is taking the curiosity out of play. You don't have to wonder what happens when someone has false wisdom, when someone is really trying to undermine the truth. He tells you what's going to happen. It's going to be chaotic. And where someone is trying to undermine the truth, you can find every evil thing. That's what it looks like. He takes the curiosity out of play and he makes it easy to recognize. In verse 17, he shows us the character of the wise. And the thing that I think is important for us to consider is why we consistently fail to demonstrate this behavior. It's something we have to ask ourselves. For each person, it might be a little bit different. That's why I'm not going to answer the question. But you have to consider why we fail to demonstrate this behavior constantly. And then in verse 18, seek peace with God's people. because it's not going to come about on its own. Seek peace with God's people because it's not going to come about on its own. It takes you striving to make peace for peace to actually come about. So I know that this may not have been the most organized lesson I've put together recently, but just a few thoughts from those verses in James chapter 3 to try to put us at our time limit. I think we're at that this morning. But if you've realized that maybe you're not living with true wisdom, not living with godly wisdom, you don't display the character that's mentioned here in verse 17, you don't have to wait